In April 2016, when news stories from the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists started appearing in the press, more than 500 Indians were identified as having illegal offshore companies in tax havens overseas. But reactions here were fairly muted. Across the border in Pakistan, though, it was a different story. Those are chants of Go Nawaz Go from London, New York City and across Pakistan at rallies and protest marches against the Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif. The protests went on for days, in markets and streets, even though the government said the leaks were a CIA conspiracy. During cricket matches, spectators cheering the teams would start chanting Go Nawaz Go. There was even a song about him, urging him to go, with lyrics like, "In every street and every lane, the news has spread that Sharif, whose name translates to noble, is a thief." Then the furor died down and other issues hogged the headlines. And it may have blown away entirely, says Dhrubajyoti Bhattacharjee, a research fellow who focuses on Pakistan at the Indian Council of World Affairs in New Delhi, except for a widening rift between the military and the leadership.
In between, Trump came in. He clearly stated that whatever is going on is a sham. That was naturally not to the liking of the Pakistani army.
In Pakistan, the army has more autonomy than in most democracies. Since Pakistan was created in 1947, there have been several military coups, and the country has had more than three decades, off and on, under military rule. Bhattacharjee says it wasn't just that the foreign policy was displeasing, but the economy was also taking a hit.
And then came the big blow of the falling investments of China, where China started backing out from some of the projects.
6 months later, an investigative team representing the judiciary and the army looked into Sharif and his family's London properties. After deliberations and hearings, the Supreme Court of Pakistan concluded that he lacked sadiq, honesty, and ameen, righteousness, and so he was disqualified from holding office.
He was forced to resign because it was found out that he lied. He is not honest enough to carry on with the post of the Prime Minister. Who else, like, starting from Liaquat Ali Khan, who was honest in that way? No one is honest in that way.
A sad ending for a third-term Prime Minister, but maybe not surprising given that no Prime Minister in the spotty history of Pakistani democracy has ever completed a full term. In July 2017, though his party stayed in power, his brother took over as interim Prime Minister. Bhattacharjee says corruption is par for the course in all democracies, but he's not at all surprised that in India the papers created barely a ripple. Bhattacharjee points out that 259 Pakistani nationals were named in the Panama Papers, but nobody except the Sharifs was prosecuted quite so publicly. When you follow the trail of power and see who benefits, he says, you can trace the real forces behind these unprecedented actions.
In Pakistan, I'm telling you, corruption is not an issue. All are corrupt. How that document is being used, what is the necessity of that document, that is important. Panama turned out to be a mechanism, a device with which a very powerful political family can be controlled. And that is exactly how it was used.
While cynics continue to believe the army seized the opportunity to use the documents to depose Sharif, the journalists who researched and reported the stories feel that document leaks boost the transparency of a democracy, whether in India or in Pakistan. Ritu Sareen is an editor and investigative reporter at the Indian Express, and this is the fourth document leak she's covered. She headed the team and with the consortium took the decisions on what to release and when. The Nawaz Sharif story ran on the first day the Panama Papers stories broke. While there may not be such public consequences in India like a politician stepping down, the country still stands to benefit. Sareen points out that the income tax authorities are prosecuting the people named for tax evasion.
The point is that the income tax authorities or the finance ministry is not obliged to tell anyone what they're doing as far as their investigations are concerned. The cases will quietly go to court. And the people who own the offshore companies will have to pay penalties. But people need not get to know, and they will not get to know.
And serving the public interest is forefront for journalists who worked on the Panama Papers. One of their chief concerns is inadvertently releasing information that could be a threat to national security. So to counter that, everything printed is rigorously fact-checked. And while it's ideal to reveal corruption and hold authorities to account in a democracy, reporter and editor Jay Mazumdar says, as a thumb rule, consortium partners haven't published anything that is not in the public interest. They exercise judgment and they're cautious to avoid sensationalism. What happens next, though, is out of their hands.
Media can only go that far. You can bring certain issues to notice. You can expose things which are to be exposed. But the media is not the enforcer. The media is not judiciary. I would say that, you know, if there is to be some proverbial revolution to happen, it won't come from media. I mean, we should not take ourselves so seriously.
And while he commends the media of Pakistan, he acknowledges that they have a difficult job. Pakistani journalists often self-censor because regulatory bodies monitor everything that is reported. Just in Sharif's last four-year term, which ended this past July, 12 journalists were killed in Pakistan. As recently as last November, the Pakistan Electronic Media Regulatory Authority clamped down on TV stations, effecting a 28-hour news blackout after stations showed religious demonstrations against the government. And it's not clear whether the impact of the Panama Papers is going to last. Sharif is actively vying to come back for another term. Analysts like Bhattacharjee say that while exposing a corrupt leader is well and good, it's only created a vacuum for the next leader who may or may not be a puppet of the army. Either way, he says, the leaks have made Pakistan's entire situation more unstable.
If countries like Pakistan, which is a nuclear weapon state, goes through serious phases of instability, political as well as economic, South Asia can't grow, India can't grow, serious investments of China are blocked. It's linked. Afghanistan, it's linked. So we just cannot point out that this type of political instability will strengthen people further. They won't. It depends on the country concerned.
So was all that hard work reporting the leaks worth it? Journalist Mazumdar says the amount of data they crunched equaled reading 200 paperback books in 3 months. But he seems sanguine about what leaks mean for democracy.
In terms of impact on a democracy as a whole, as a system, be it Pakistan or India, I would say it works at two levels. First, it makes the system look bad if they don't act on it. If you keep at it, then you can push the system that bit. And at another level, there is an element of uncertainty. There is no warranty for complete secrecy anymore. So anyone in India or anywhere in the world, however big and powerful you are, if you go somewhere, do some business with the assumption that it will stay there, you will think twice now. In the last 4 or 5 years, the number of leaks and the growing scale of it makes everyone a little jittery, and that's the other good sign, I think.
Just a few months after Sharif resigned, another leak, the Paradise Papers, named 135 more Pakistanis, including another former Prime Minister, Shaukat Aziz. Aziz lives in London now and may escape formal prosecution by the Pakistani government, but the journalists who worked on these stories are confident he will not escape public scrutiny. From Delhi, I'm Chavi Sachdev for America Abroad.